This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning and welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Lineup again, it's good to be back in studio this week, and lots been going down in the motor industry. I'm taking it there's probably some traffic out there because our studio is looking pretty empty this morning. Fazana, how are you doing?
Good, thanks, and you, Tak?
Yeah, very, very good, thank you. I know George is here. He's just arrived. I saw him screaming into the parking lot, which is a good thing. But I think what we'll do is we'll kick off with our first story this week. And as you all know, and we are all consumers out there who pay taxes and stuff, we obviously know that there was a tax hike, and what I wanted to just touch base on was how this has hit the car prices. So if you know that April was the month that South African motor industry was not looking forward to, with Treasury's 2018 budget, which was obviously announced in February, and they've imposed a taxation triple whammy on vehicles that came into effect on the 1st of April. So in addition to the infamous 1% VAT hike that's affected everything that we buy, you know, barring the few essentials like bread, the assault on car buyers also came in the form of a small hike in emissions taxes, and that's an additional 10 rand per gram of CO2 above 120 grams per kilogram, and a 5% hike in the maximum ad valorem excise duty for imported vehicles. There's a whole list of cars, and having a look at how they've gone up, and you know, they say 1% tax hike, but some cars have gone up quite considerably. I mean, if I have a look at this Hyundai Grand, the R10, it's gone up from 149,000 to 154. That's 3.3%. The Audi A3 Sportback, I see, from 452 to 456. That's just under 1%. So in general, car prices have naturally gone up. And I'm going to hand over to George. George, how are you doing?
How are you, Tak?
Yeah, very good, thanks. George, what's your take on this? Naturally, you know, any tax increase is going to affect anyone who drives a motor vehicle. And I think that obviously a lot of people would have maybe gone out in March and purchased a vehicle before this happened.
I think we saw that in the numbers, because March performed extremely well.
Yep.
When it came to car sales. Okay. So I think the consumers were, or car buyers were, trying to trump this VAT increase.
Yeah,
and it's a couple of thousand rand, but you know, at the end of the day, every little bit counts.
Absolutely.
And you know, at the end of the day, also VAT is a consumer tax.
Yeah.
So it's not a business tax. Mm-hmm. You know, businesses pay the net of whatever the tax is. So it's more a consumer tax, because at the end of the day, the consumer can't claim any VAT input back.
Yeah.
So when VAT increases, the consumer gets hit the worst. Yeah.
I also see, obviously, and we also know that, I mean, petrol went up, what, 76 cents a litre, was it last week, 2 weeks ago? But, I mean, that's obviously, you'll feel the knock of that. I mean,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, as far as fuel goes, you know, I think it's a market that's, what's the right word? Manipulated.
Yes. Okay.
You know, so yeah. It depends on how the suppliers of oil decide to set the price.
Okay.
So that's just my take.
Yeah. So there's quite an extensive list of the vehicle increases, but I suppose it is what it is, and you just got to roll with the punches, and you know, take what comes your way. I see here that, and this is an article that I pulled this morning. So Tesla finally chasing Porsche down the German Autobahn, and there was a lady by the name of Jana Hoffner, who did 2,360 mile road trip from Stuttgart to Oslo and back, and she just can't, you know, she's just remarking how amazing the trip was. And the crazy thing is, she did it in a Tesla, which means that she had to make sure that there were charging stations along the way. And she actually said that she knew she was going from city to city. She didn't have to do much planning, because that's how widespread the charging stations are, you know, in Germany, which is really, really nice to know.
Yeah, I mean, in Europe and America, Tesla's really done a good job to put up these supercharging stations. So So, you know, it's nice to see because when it happens in Europe and America, it'll probably happen in the rest of the world.
Well, what's nice as well is that the kind of the German, the OEMs have also all chipped in to obviously, you know, help with the rollout of this charging infrastructure. So they're obviously understanding that this is where it's all going.
Yeah.
And yeah, just nice to know that, you know, yeah, people are swapping up Porsche 911 turbos for Tesla Model S's.
Hey, Model S P100D with Ludacris, I'd take that over a Porsche any day.
It's an, you've seen one of those in the flesh, haven't you? Well, not in the flesh, but
well, yeah, I try to get as close as I could.
Yeah, fantastic looking cars. I don't know if you guys recall, but in September last year, we spoke of a story about a gentleman who unfortunately drove into five young adults who were changing a car tire on the side of the road, and he landed up killing four of them and obviously injuring the one quite drastically. But I see here that he was initially charged for culpable homicide after plying into this group of youths, obviously killing four of them. And the National Prosecuting Authority has altered the charges against this gentleman, and he's actually been sentenced with four cases of murder and one of attempted murder.
Wow.
For the incident, because he was 0.3
over the limit.
And what's really nice to know is that the cops on the day actually did a blood test. They had one of those the vans, and they did a test. They called for one, and they did a test on the side of the road, because apparently the breathalyzer, you're not allowed to use it as part of your evidence in court.
Yeah, I think it's got there's a lot of variation in that breathalyzer.
Sure.
You know, it's very dependent on many factors, whereas a blood test is conclusive. The trouble with the blood test is it's hard to get very quickly.
Yes.
And by the time you get to the blood test, as the authorities, you know, your body metabolizes the alcohol constantly.
Yeah. So constantly dropping.
Yeah. So chances are, you know, the blood test comes back and you're under the limit.
Yeah.
So it's good that, the authorities are on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's never a nice thing to talk about, but you know, the fact that, you know, if you do decide, I mean, because you take by drinking and driving, you kind of take the law into your own hands, and you know, you should have the law book thrown at you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to putting other people's lives in danger,
but
I guess
that's
that's the thing.
It's just not nice that it's come about, because you know, you actually have to, you know, someone has to die in order for other people to start taking this thing, you know, quite seriously.
Well, people don't have to die. The cops must just kind of clamp down harder.
We're going to say visible policing on our show again.
Exactly.
Hello, Mark.
Even with all that, they still won't take it seriously. Hello, hello, George. Hello.
No, I think the authorities in South Africa take drinking and driving very seriously.
Yeah, the public, police, unfortunately, still doesn't.
Yeah, the public don't, but you know, that's to their detriment, and in this case, in point.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, let's move on here. So from SA to the world, the BMW stars the local X3 production. So in the first production, X3 built at Roslyn after 35 years of building 3-series sedans and just under 1.2 million of them, to be precise, for both the domestic and export markets. It's awesome to know that they have rolled off the first production released X3 from the BMW Roslyn plant out in Pretoria. And I think this is another, you know, feather in the cap of our local, you know, manufacturers here, that they are now going to start producing X3s here, because from if you just understand what's happening, sedan sales are dropping and SUV sales are obviously, you know, on the increase. And the Germans have turned to their South African manufacturing plant to produce the X3, and they're going to roll it out for export. And obviously for local sales.
Well, it's nice to see that kind of investment in South Africa.
Yeah.
More than $6 billion invested to turn out 76,000 of these things every year.
Yeah.
So I think that might just be probably the greatest production volume yet seen at Roslyn.
Yeah.
And is there anyone that competes with that? Do we know? I mean,
look, in the global scheme, 76,000 a year is a drop, but still, if you think that BMW probably sells about, well, that would probably be account for about a third of the total X3 sales every year. The rest will come from Spartanburg in the US.
Okay.
But I think most of the right-hand drive markets will be serviced by South Africa, okay, and then some of the left-hand drive markets as well.
And do you think this is the start? I mean, do you think we'll get other derivatives within that range, like the X5?
No.
We won't see those just yet?
I actually asked that question at the X3's local launch.
Okay.
And they said, for starters, the physical facilities aren't compatible with the larger cars. They need more space.
They need more space.
I mean, they've literally raised the roof on the factory to do this. It's quite an impressive project.
Yeah.
But that's why they can only build X3s. They probably even won't even be able to build X4s here, even though they're basically the same thing. They just don't have capacity or room.
Sure. So I mean, they must be absolutely pumping then. They've obviously got set targets and they've just got to churn out vehicles on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that investment has to obviously come with the return.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it's a popular vehicle that's being manufactured.
Absolutely. I mean, what did you say? 160 million was poured into the project. And that
it
was more.
6 billion, but this was an extra.
Yeah, 160 million just to increase from 71,000 to 76,000 vehicles a year.
Yeah.
It was really, really nice to see. So, kudos to BMW and kudos to the guys in the Roslyn plant. I think it's really nice. So that's all good. There's a new Porsche brand experience for South Africa. So Porsche South Africa has invested in a new Porsche studio in Cape Town, so situated at the popular V&A waterfront. The new site adopts an innovative sales format, enabling Porsche to interact with a wider target group. So being the first Porsche studio in the Southern Hemisphere, visitors will enjoy an immersive brand experience highlighting a range of Porsche services. So basically what you can go do now is you can go down to this design center and kind of custom fit your Porsche with, you know, bells and whistles.
Awesome.
and nuts and bolts. And I think that really is, I think that's more aligned to the modern consumer than just I want that one, off the shelf.
Yeah, the thing is, especially if you're in the market for something like a Porsche, you don't just buy a car, you buy an experience.
Mm.
And facilities such as these, they are explicitly aimed at giving the best buying or ordering experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you buy the lifestyle.
If anybody buys anything for anything other than an experience, it's boring.
Absolutely.
Life is about a series of experiences.
Yeah.
Other car showrooms should follow suit. It's about the experience. I mean, you walk into a Mercedes-Benz dealership, some of the best Mercedes-Benz dealerships in the country, and you have an experience. You
Absolutely.
Smell coffee when you walk in there.
Yeah.
You get served with cappuccino and a biscuit. They even put the fancy cocoa on the top in the Mercedes-Benz logo.
Yes.
So experience is good.
And you don't have to go to the end of the universe. I mean, we're not asking for dances and pom-poms and all that kind of stuff, but I think there are brands who do this really, really, really well. It's like going to an espresso store, in any shopping center. You walk in there and it's an experience when you're buying
It's just coffee, but you have an experience.
But you can spend an hour in that store just buying coffee. I think that's really, really nice. Something actually that happened to me last week, and I'm not going to mention any names or anything, but I had to pop into a dealership just to go and sort something out. And I walked in, and I got to the receptionist, and her head was down, and I could see she was on her phone. So I waited. I must have waited for about, and I'm not lying, I actually started counting in my head, and I got to about 2.5 minutes, nearly three.
What?
And she was on her phone, and I thought, okay, hang on a sec. But she wasn't. Didn't look like she was typing, because I was just going to stand there and wait, because maybe she was in the middle of something really important. I mean, she didn't know who I was though. And eventually, she put her head up, and she's like, "Oh, hello," and I was like, "Hello," and she dropped her phone down, and she was actually playing a game. So I stood there for 3 minutes and. She was oblivious to the fact that that I was standing there. So now in my head just went to, if that was a customer, that is not a nice first impression, is it?
Yeah, but the thing I always tell people, it's like the taxi story. The fact that you get bad service means that those who give good service actually make money.
Yes.
So there's opportunity. Bad service creates opportunity because there's opportunity for other people, and I like that. I don't like bad service, but bad service shows me that there is still opportunity because those bad service businesses are still in business.
Well, that's the thing.
Which means if you can crack out a brilliant service,
imagine you're going to do more business.
Exactly,
you?
You're going to do more business. You can do well.
Absolutely.
So less than looking at the situation negatively, the positive out of that is there's opportunity.
Room for improvement.
People must just kind of grab that opportunity and run with it.
Yeah, but surely as a receptionist, your job is to make sure that if anybody walks in that front door, if anybody comes to your desk, they're acknowledged, you know, there and then. Barring being on the phone and just saying, I'll be with you in 2 minutes. You know, then the sure. person actually knows what, you know, what they're waiting
Pretty
for.
Sure that wasn't the only dealership on the planet with those cars.
No, it wasn't.
Exactly.
Yeah, in fact, yeah, absolutely not. So, anyway, that was just a story, you know, that I had last week with the dealership.
Go to the next one.
Absolutely. And I wasn't buying a car, so, you know, I hope. Actually, one day it would be nice to go into one of those dealerships to buy a car, because then you know you've made it. Deploy an online application system so readers respond to a license. The licensing center improvements. I don't know when last either of you guys and you first went to a licensing center.
No, thanks.
But it's an absolute nightmare. The way you're treated by the security guard who thinks he runs the show at the gate.
And but you get this everywhere.
It is like this.
People have this little bit of power.
Yes.
And then it becomes a power thing.
Yeah.
The police do it on the side of the road as well. It's a power thing.
Yes, I mean, I've had to go and have my license redone, just renew my license, and what a mission. You know, the hours that you need to stand in queues, and I don't see why this can't become something that could be done online, which is what I wanted to chat about today. I mean, is this a system that we could put online? Why can't I renew my driver's license online? It's 2018. Why?
If you don't go into the office, the appropriate officials don't get their kickbacks.
Do you think that's what it is? Do you think that there's... I mean, in my head, I'm telling myself that you should be able to just click online, redo your license. I know you've got to go for an eye test, but maybe you could go for an eye test at an optometrist and just submit a form online to get it done. Because every time you want to renew, you have to have your eye test.
I mean, you get these services that, I think there's one at... in Four Ways somewhere, where an optometrist has set up a facility, and the government officials come and sit there, and that's pretty efficient. Yeah. So you know you should seek out those because they do work.
It's Specsavers, isn't it?
I think it's Specsavers. Yes.
In Four Ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
So those work, and they're pretty efficient.
Absolutely.
You know, go to the general licensing department, and obviously, it's not gonna be as efficient.
Yeah.
But a capitalist business like Specsavers. Having set up a service like that means that it's more efficient. You get your appointment time, you pitch up there, you get served at that time, and you get the hell out of there. Yeah. But I agree with you. Why can't it be online?
Why can't it be online? Or if I go, why can't the system just work if I do choose to go and stand at a licensing department? That's the fact is you can't even get the paperwork that you need. Online. So you actually got to go there, get the paperwork. You've probably got to fill it out in the queue. Standing in a queue for this, a queue for that, and a queue for something else. It's crazy and it's backwards and it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't.
Look, not all licensing departments are that backwards though.
No, for sure.
I've been to Akasha the last time I had to renew mine.
Yeah.
And as I was standing in the queue outside, an official came around and handed out the appropriate papers.
Yeah.
And then also there was this is called Free Enterprise. There was a dude with a camera coming around and taking your picture on the spot.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Putting up a background behind you.
Yeah.
And then taking your picture and giving it to you right there while you're in the queue. Yeah. So that was quite good. And I was in and out in 3 hours.
Yeah.
But still doesn't explain why I have to go in.
Yeah.
It should be available online.
Because it's merely just a paperwork thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a processing thing.
It's
a process. You pitch up there, and you got to sign a bunch of documents, and you got to submit them, and then you get your license back.
Yeah, I see the Department of Public and Safety's licensing directorate says it has embarked on a project to improve services and customer experiences at centres. Maybe we'll start getting coffee when you go and stand in the licensing department. The City of Johannesburg says it will extend operating hours to Saturdays and that the centres will be open from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. for the renewal of driver's license, vehicle disc licences and motor vehicle registrations, etc. So now they're open on a Saturday as well, so you don't have to take time out of your week, and you can crack on and get your license done on a Saturday. So all good. Right, George, did you watch the Chinese Grand Prix this weekend?
Is that
a stupid question?
Of course I did.
Before we get onto that, I just wanted to, because we had Bahrain 2 weeks ago,
yes.
Right? And there was a bit of an incident there that I've picked up between Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. There was some argy-bargy And I see here Hamilton says sorry to Verstappen after he insulted him, because I think Hamilton had alluded that Verstappen's just a little boy and he doesn't know how to drive.
So, well, I think a lot of that's going on at the moment. Verstappen is pulling some moves that quite frankly might be putting other drivers at risk.
Yeah.
And yesterday was a classic example when he crashed into Vettel. I mean, he just potentially took the championship away from Vettel just in that race, and it was his fault. There's no doubt that it was his fault.
Yeah.
Crashing into the side of Vettel.
Yeah.
But you know, Vettel handled it much better than Vettel handled the Lewis Hamilton bumping incident last year, where maybe Vettel's matured too.
Or maybe just Vettel likes Verstappen more than he likes Hamilton.
Maybe.
So there could be that. But I see that Lewis Hamilton did extend his hand and they shook hands and there was an apology that was offered. So that looks like it's water under the bridge. But in terms of the race this weekend, quite an exciting race. I quite liked the way the grid started with the two Ferraris, the two McLarens, and then the two
Red Bulls. Representative of their natural positions in 2018's Formula One.
Yeah.
Ferraris are the strongest at the moment.
Yeah.
Mercedes is second, and Red Bulls are up there being third.
And quite an interesting track as well. I mean, 16 corners, and I see that you're only flat out for what they said 54% of the time that you're on the track.
It's quite a high percentage that you're flat out on that track. But I think what's showing its head or showing its face is the fact that Ferraris were really bad last year on power on the long straights, and this year they've changed the game. They've got much more power on the long straights, which is what Mercedes is battling to keep up with. It looks like Mercedes has come from last year and they've got a very similar car to this year. Or should I say, similar car this year to last year, whereas Ferrari's improved.
Yes.
And probably improved marginally and are equal to slightly better than Mercedes-Benz.
Okay.
But at the end of that day, it makes for good racing because they are very close.
Yeah, they are very, very close. And again, it was obviously we didn't see Hamilton make the podium this weekend, so it obviously finished. Was it Ricciardo, Bottas, and then Kimi Raikkonen?
Yeah, Ricciardo was unbelievable. The safety car came out, and it was just opportunistic. That's all it was, just purely opportunistic. But Red Bull was awake, and as you know, if the safety car comes out and you are before the pit entry lane, the best thing you could ever do
is pit. Okay.
And put on new tires because you save the most amount of time in that scenario, especially if you're about midway through the race and you're gonna have to put on new tires at some point down in the next 10 laps is to put on tires. And Red Bull were in the perfect position. Actually, Ferrari could have gone into the pits, but they missed the opportunity. I think they were sleeping. And
so they just didn't call it.
And similarly, well, Raikkonen could have, not Vettel, but. Similarly, Mercedes-Benz, they could have pitted Hamilton. They didn't do it.
So do you have to be in front of the safety car when it comes out?
No, so the safety car comes out,
yes.
and then everybody kind it's of concertinas up behind that safety car. But where you are relative to the pit entry, so if you've passed the pit entry already,
then you
bug it.
And you can't go in if the safety car is around for three laps.
No, you can.
Oh, you can.
You can. You can go in. But the best scenario is if you go into the pits as that safety car kind of comes out, and you save the most amount of time, and that's what Red Bull did. And they got fresh tires, they put on the super soft tires, which meant that they could really wind it when they when that safety car came back in, and that's exactly what Ricciardo did.
Yeah.
Verstappen tried as well. He was doing similar lap times, but he keeps crashing into everyone. Right. So what's the point?
Didn't crash him.
Yeah, it's not going to help.
Whereas Ricciardo, on those fresh tires, as well as Ricciardo's renowned for late braking, he outbrakes almost anybody.
Yeah, well, I mean, I saw some of the highlights, and I mean, when you get the view from the actual vehicle, you're like, how is he going to make this corner? And just, I don't know.
He just does.
The guys know
he
how to handle those cars. They really, really are good. And then just quickly, something I see that the Russians are pressing ahead with grid girls. So the promoter of the Russian Grand Prix says that he's determined to find a way around Formula One's new grid girl ban. He says, because our girls are the most beautiful. So he still thinks that there's a way to get girls. They won't necessarily be holding
Umbrellas.
Umbrellas or doing anything with the vehicles, but he reckons that there's still a place for pretty girls to be in F1. And I think Monaco are following, Monaco and Russia to ignore the grid girl ban. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, they believe that that's what's required.
To be honest with you, over the last three races, Ivan missed seeing grid girls on the track. It's nothing, neither here nor there.
I think it's more spectator thing when you at the
Grand Prix. Perhaps, but at the end of the day, you know, when I'm watching the Grand Prix, I'm actually looking at the at what's being said about the drivers absolutely. And their chances of winning and where they are and what their strategies are, that kind of thing. So you know.
I suppose that's the same as saying, like, you watch rugby because you want to see the, you know, the cheerleaders before the game.
Yeah, it's just a bit of entertainment, but the main reason is the rugby game, right?
Exactly. Right, guys, let's get on to our topical content over here. And something that's really, really exciting, and we're almost ready to let all of the cats out the bag, but we do know that the Auto Trader South African Bike Festival is coming up in May, and that's the 25th, 26th, and 27th of May. So I thought I'd touch on that, just, you know, kind of allude to the fact that this awesome event is going down at Kyalami over that weekend, and there's a hell of a lot to do. So for any motorbike enthusiasts, or if you've even considered riding a motorbike, this is the place to be. George, we know that we were obviously involved last year. This is the third year that the event is going down, and it's proving to be an extremely successful event in terms of the numbers. The crowds come out. There's obviously, you know, part of the championship, the local racing scene comes down, so they have official races, and there's just everything and anything to do with two wheels at Bikefest.
You know what I like the most about this Bikefest? You know, beside it now being, you know, the biggest bike show in the country, or bike festival in the country, is that for the last 3 years, there's been this iterative approach to making it better.
Yes.
And that's encouraging to see. Yeah. You know, it's not like, you know, people think that they have the formula to be successful. Yes, it is successful. Mm. Well, what can we actually do to make it better? And then implementing that the next year. So Absolutely. This year is a massive improvement on last year, which was also a massive improvement on the year before.
Yeah.
And that's nice to see. So when we're able to let all the cats out the bag, you'll see that this one is phenomenally better than
the other one. Absolutely. So there's there's obviously the circuit test rides, the same as at the Festival of Motoring. You can come down and hop onto a new bike and, you know, take it for a spin around the track, which I think
just make sure you come with a license.
Yeah, you have to have a license. You can't just rock up and ride. It doesn't work like that. But they've also got adventure ride outs this year, so you can go onto some of these off roading bikes and go and, you know, playing the dirt and the dust. Monster Energy will be there as usual. The Super GP Championships trophy is going to be on. There's plenty of action for the kids. And I think what we'll do is, as we get close to the time, and you know what, let's say it now, we are the title sponsor. There's a reason why we're the title sponsor of Bikefest this year. And we've got some exciting things planned for not only the consumers, but our dealer groups, our dealers that advertise with us online. And then one big final announcement that will let the cat out the bag close to the time. But I think, George, our involvement at Bike Festival is just an opportunity for us as a brand to really engage with our consumers that use our site on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons we're involved here is, you know, besides being passionate about bringing buyers and sellers together and trying to fulfill those dreams, is you know, we sat back and we realized about 2 years ago that we've actually got the biggest bike portal in South Africa.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, decided to put a push behind South African biking.
Bikes. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we've obviously spoken, you know, internally about this quite a bit, but we all feel that there's a massive opportunity for more people to get onto two wheels, you know, in South Africa. And we understand that there are those concerns about safety, and, you know, maybe the roads are dangerous. But I also think it's up to the rider, and it's how you embrace, you know, two wheels. If you ride safely,
you don't need tattoos.
You know, you don't need tattoos, and you don't need to ride a big bike. I mean, you know, we've spoken about my scooter before. It's 110 cc's, and it gets me to the office and back not every single day, but I use it quite a bit, and I wouldn't class myself as a biker.
Saw an awesome KTM yesterday.
Oh, where?
My word. Went doing the runabouts yesterday, and saw this Street Fighter KTM. I don't know which model it was. but it was done up. Also, I think it may be stock standard, but okay. The coloring and the stickers on this bike just amazing. Made it look amazing. I always looked at KTM as an off-road bike.
Yes, yeah.
This was a road street fighter bike. It was awesome. I hope that KTM does massively successful. They're going to be there, obviously.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be there. We know that that's confirmed. Martin, are you much of a two-wheel person? I mean, you know a hell of a lot about four wheels, but...
Would you believe I'm not a biker at all? But I'm attending this year's festival with a view to investigating getting onto two wheels.
Okay.
Because light traffic such as today,
yeah.
The only way to get around this, well, it's either leave at 5 in the morning or get on two wheels.
Get on two wheels, yeah. I think
so. I'm actually considering getting on a bike now for the first time in my 40s, for the first time in my life
would
to get on a bike.
Never say so, Martin.
Yeah, no, so I think, if you are interested or if you have anything that you want to find out about, two wheels, then Bikefest is definitely for you this year.
And even if you're not into bikes per
se, absolutely.
I see we have some other car-related stuff there as well. Jason Webb Drifting.
Yeah.
And if you're into charity stuff, there's a charity run.
There is a blanket run. Yeah, there's a blanket run that happens on the Sunday. It's quite a nice ride out.
Well, just bring the kids.
Well,
I mean, there's so much kid activity.
Yeah. I don't think there's too many children that you put next to a motorbike that revs their engine. The kid will be like, you know what, I like this.
Yeah.
So it really is entertaining, and there's lots to see. There really is. So
amongst others, the Monster Energy goals.
Well, those as well. So thank goodness Liberty Media don't have a say in what happens at Bike Festival. Otherwise, they might have taken those goals away as well. But anyway, so we'll unpack that a little bit further as we get closer to the time, and we'll get some of the relevant people who are involved in the event into studio, and we'll unpack that further. But go and check it out. The website is if you Google SA Bike Festival, you can go and find out everything that's going down there. Blatant lawlessness. Dashcam captures reckless motorist in Pretoria. I don't know if you guys know the road from Pretoria to Polokwane. It's the N1, huh? And it's a dual carriageway, no island in the middle, but a motorist was driving from Polokwane back to Pretoria, and there was so much traffic in the Pretoria to Polokwane direction that these motorists had just decided to turn two lanes into three, and on the highway they are driving in the opposite direction, just because
in the oncoming fast lane, no less.
It is ludicrous, and you know the question that I wanted to ask is where do you draw a line? I mean, what gives anyone? I mean, most people know that a solid white line, a solid light one that's sits in between two yellow lines.
Solid light one.
Solid light one.
Also like solid light one.
Me too. But I just don't get these people. Why would you do that? Not only putting yourself at risk, but everybody else on the road.
It's the sense of entitlement that's so pervasive in South Africa.
And it's almost like one person does it, so that makes it right, and then everybody else thinks that they can follow suit. And it's absolutely disgusting. And the fact that, we don't have respect for fellow road users is quite, it's quite apparent in this video.
Everybody should get dash cams.
I think so too.
Put this shit on social media.
Absolutely.
And then that'll deter people from breaking the law because you may be too nervous to get caught on someone's dash cam. So just put a flipping dash cam.
Do you really think that would make a difference?
If enough people had it and there were repercussions,
yeah.
So the fear of getting found out, often deters people from doing things. So
if there's consequences, though.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Only if there's consequences. But and sometimes the consequences come in the wrong circumstance, and people have to have accidents, and it's sad. It's absolutely sad.
I mean, and again, another incident now. Fazan has just found something on social media where guys are taking an off ramp to the right, and turning that now into a lane. And obviously, I think this is the biggest.
Yeah, but this happens all over.
That happens all over, and I think that's the biggest issue with congestion, because
it causes gridlock.
It does cause gridlock. If you just followed the rules of the road, we wouldn't have the traffic. I don't think would be as bad because it would flow. You might sit But you're not going to have this kind of, you know, gridlock. Mm. Like you
The gridlock cause is often caused by not following the rules of the road.
Yeah.
You know, you think about an intersection. You think to yourself, oh, I'm going to get across this line to get through the traffic light. But then you stand in the middle of the intersection. Guess what? The other cars can't cross the intersection. Absolutely. And suddenly there's gridlock. Yeah. And it takes a lot longer to get through that intersection. Yeah. So it's silly.
I don't get it. And I don't think we could scream and shout from the rooftops. But again, it goes down to
people must just get dash cams,
yeah.
Capture it and put it on social media, and then maybe that'll be a deterrent, and it'll also be evidence if something bad happens.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't see why this footage is quite quite good, so you could actually see the cars and the trucks coming in that opposite direction.
Hopefully the authorities kind of like pick a couple of these guys and take their license plates.
Absolutely.
And take them to task
and hit them
honestly
a serious fine.
Yeah,
I really think that should be done. Right, gentlemen, let's just get into our car review here quickly. And I know that, George, you had the opportunity to drive the Mercedes-AMG GTS last week. Chad has got a review for us, which I'll play, but I just wanted to get your opinion and Martin's opinion. I mean, have you driven it, Mart? Mm-hmm. So you've both driven it. Maybe you've
driven the whole range, actually.
Some of us are more fortunate than others.
You know I like V8s, right?
Yes.
This V8 has got two turbos.
Okay.
And you get into this car, feels like a, you know, an ordinary sports car. It's not it's not out of the ordinary when it comes to sitting in the car itself. I mean, it might as well be sitting in a Porsche or a BMW M-Class, you know, one of those. So that's fine. Start the car up and it's the same as any other kind of V8, and the engine rumbles, nice noise. I mean, the Lexus has a similar sound.
Yeah.
But the difference occurs in two respects, in my opinion. The first respect is when you put your foot on the accelerator, that car will wheel spin all the way to third.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
All the way to third gear, it will wheel spin. I wasn't brave enough to put it into race mode because all the traction controls disappear in race mode, and it would have gone seriously sideways if I'd put it in race mode. But I put it in Sport Plus because you get the normal comfort mode, Sport Plus mode, and then race mode. And Sport Plus mode, it stiffens the suspension. It changes the characteristics of the car. It changes the sound of the car. You put your foot down, it begins to wheel spin, and then the traction control kicks in. And then it gives it more power, and it creates this almost what I can call almost wheel spin. It's the tires are screeching a little bit, but you can feel if you put it in race mode, that thing is gonna light up like a Formula One car.
Can I really shock you?
Before you get to shocking you, so they're using this car as the pace car or the in the Formula One.
Okay.
And apparently it is a lot faster around the track. I think six seconds a lap faster than the previous Mercedes-Benz that they used, but still like standing still versus a Formula One car. So if I can. You know, if that thing scares me, I can just imagine what a Formula One car must feel like.
Yeah.
So here comes the shocker. The one you drove has, I think, 375 kilowatts. There are two models.
410 horsepower.
There's a 410 kilowatt one above that. That's the AMG GTC.
Yeah.
And then there's a 430 kilowatt one on top of that. So, you know, you can go up by 55 kilowatts compared to the one you drove.
That's an entire Polo.
that's literally a complete extra Polo Vivo right there.
It's an entire Polo extra in the power.
That's insane.
It's unbelievable. And the camera of the car banks. So when you go around a corner, the suspension changes the bank angle of the car to compensate for roll.
Oh, wow.
It's unbelievable, the technology inside these cars.
And even with all that performance, if you have a little bit of an idea how to drive, it's actually a really forgiving, accessible car as well. Okay, look, if you treat it like an idiot, it will spit, chew up and spit out some bloody bits on the other end. But if you just treat it with a little bit of respect, it's actually surprisingly easy to drive very fast. I mean, I accidentally ran a 1 minute 9 seconds at Zwartkops on my third lap with this car.
Gee whiz.
And how long is that lap?
Hey?
How long is the Zwartkops?
I don't know, but to give you an idea, a Westpac modified in the hands of a professional racing driver runs about a 1 minute.
Jeez, luck.
I was 9 seconds off on my third lap with an unfamiliar car.
Yeah, because of the tech.
Because of the tech. It's actually surprisingly pliable. Yeah. You can play with it.
It's unbelievable.
Okay, well, let's see what Chad had to say, and we'll be back straight after this.
Hi, guys, and welcome to this week's review. We are going to be taking a look at the Mercedes-AMG GTS Coupe. Now, I have spent some time with the AMG GTs in the past. I attended the launch where we got to drive the GT and the GTS when they launched. And more recently, they have released the GTR and the GTC. Now, I haven't had a chance to drive those. And if it all sounds a little confusing, let me explain it to you. The GT Coupe is pretty much the garden variety entry-level GT. After that, you're going to get the slightly more hardcore version. That's the sporty version. That is the GTS, the one that we were driving. The GTR is a more race-inspired one, and the GTC, well, the C stands for convertible. That's a drop-top one. Now, I haven't had a chance to drive any of those, and I'd be quite keen because I'm a big, big fan of the GT. I'm really enamored with the engineering that's gone into the GT Coupe. It's a real driver's car. It isn't a Mercedes-Benz that has been taken and fettled by AMG. It is an AMG car that has been developed from the ground up by AMG and then just been given the Mercedes-Benz stamp of approval. As such, it really is an enthusiast vehicle, and it's all about the performance, and it's all about the numbers, and the engineering behind it is absolutely fascinating. Now, all of these vehicles run the M178 motor, and that's a 4-litre V8. It is a little bit smaller, but it is twin-turbo, or as Mercedes-AMG call it, bi-turbo. So it has two turbochargers, and that forces the air in and gives you a little more power. But they've done this a little differently. Instead of hanging the turbochargers off the sides of the engine, they wanted to keep the weight as close to the center and as low as possible, so they went and put it inside the V. This is a hot inside V. That's the terminology that they use for it. And this isn't a new thing. BMW, Audi, Ford, they've all done this before and in the past. But this is the first time that a Mercedes product, a Mercedes-Benz or a Mercedes-AMG, has done this. And the engine itself, while very similar to the 4-litre V8 that you're going to get in the C63, this one has more race-inspired goodness, and it runs a dry sump. Now, dry sump means that the oil reservoir isn't sitting underneath the engine, it's sitting off to the side, and that oil's just being pumped into the engine. And this means that the engine can sit a lot lower in the chassis, because the engineers were really determined to get the center of gravity as close and as to the center and as low as possible. So for this, they made the front end up of magnesium, which is a really lightweight metal, and they also gave it a transaxle. And that means that the gearbox sits at the rear, connected to the diff. So that weight distribution is near 50-50 in the GT. They really, really concentrated on it, and it really can be felt. It's a beautifully strong and powerful performance motor, and it develops 375 kilowatts. That's about 35 kilowatts more than what you're going to get in the regular GT, and 650 newton meters. That's 50 newton meters more than the GT. So the GTS does have a little more power. And they say that it'll go from 0 to 100 in 3.8 seconds and onto a top speed of 310. Now, I didn't test any of this myself, but it is all very plausible, very believable. You just need to feel the raw, brute in-gear acceleration, which is absolutely phenomenal. This car really does get up and go. Weighs 1.6 tons, and it uses all its power in such a fantastic manner that just makes this a real purist car. Then there's the suspension, which is also just wonderful. It's got active suspension. What this does is, as you start taking a turn, let's say you're entering a highway and you're taking that long left-hand turn, you can actually feel it sort of dip the left-hand side of the vehicle a little bit, almost as if it's dropping a shoulder in. It does this by softening up the left-hand side and stiffening up the right-hand side. And this means that it keeps the car very level through the bends. And it does this not only to the suspension, but to the engine mounts as well. So the engine mounts are also active. And this gives you a fantastically sure-footed, planted feel around corners. It really is a point and squirt machine, but you need to be very, very careful because of that aggressive acceleration, and especially in-gear acceleration can be quite tricky when it comes to overtaking. You sort of need to pull out into the lane next to you first before you accelerate, because if you accelerate in the same lane and think you're just going to nip around the car in front of you, you're going to be straight into his bumper. You're not going to miss him. It's just really, really brutal. It's mated to a 7-speed speed shift.
Oh, I don't know what went down there, but I don't know. Chad, obviously, we'll finish this recording sooner than rather than later, but we do have the guys in studio and know the vehicle, and I think to Chad's point, really, really is a fantastic car to drive. George, what is the price tag on that vehicle? Do you know, off the top? 1.8?
Probably close to 2 million, I think.
$2.3 million.
Holy moly. But I'm assuming, you know, if you know, you're shelling out that kind of cash, like you guys have said, with the four modes that it comes in, it sounds like, I mean, if you've got that kind of ammo, a nice toy to have for those weekend runs, huh?
Yeah, no, I could think of other things to spend 2.3 million rand on.
Sure.
Well, no, I 2.3 million rand, you could get yourself a really nice Ferrari for 2.3 million rand. I would, in terms of cars, I'd spend money on that rather than a Mercedes-Benz AMG or a Porsche.
Oh, okay.
But all to his own.
What would you buy for that price tag?
You can get a really nice Porsche 911 with pretty much all the bells and whistles.
Nice.
Which will be quicker than the Merc, yeah. Unfortunately. And the Mercedes has a great name and a great brand.
Absolutely.
But it's still not Porsche.
No, that's also true. Well, I'd buy a Polo Vivo and a house. There we go. All right. So, SA, and talking about Polo Vivos, I see we've obviously had, you know, quarter one's pretty much come and gone. I can't believe it's the middle of April already. And we've got some numbers of the best-selling passenger cars from quarter one in 2018. And I don't think any surprises here, but the VW Polo Vivo comes out on top with 7,027 units, followed by the Volkswagen Polo, which had 6,610 units. And then the Toyota Corolla, Auris, and then the Quest, 4,687, and then followed by the Fortuna with 3,598, the Etios 3,203, the Honda then in sixth position with 3,174, Ford EcoSport in seventh with 2,287, Kia Picanto in eighth with 2,268, and the Renault Kwid with 2,102 units, and in tenth place the Ford Figo with 1,764. Interesting to see though that the only SUV there, if I'm not mistaken, is the Fortuna? Yeah.
Well, you could kind of argue the EcoSport and the Renault Kwid, but maybe those are hybrid crossovers.
Kwid doesn't count as an SUV. It's tiny little hatchback, just sits a little bit taller.
That's why I say, you know, you could kind of argue that it's a bit of a crossover, but in terms of true SUV, yeah, I'd agree. The Fortuna is the only one on the list. But then again, Fortuna has been...
That's a South African car if there ever was one. I mean,
you know, it is. If you can't get a Prado, you'll get a Fortuna.
But what makes this Polo Vivo performance even more impressive is, remember, it was only launched halfway through February.
That's also true.
The previous model Vivos were in run-out phase the end of last year, beginning of this year.
So to top this list
after such a short time span.
Which means that you could double the 7,000 effectively. It's effectively potentially, you know,
yeah, because
13,000
units. Because they haven't had a full quarter of training, have they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I just, you know, really, really interesting that the top three, you know, vehicles are all, you know, small hatchbacks. Well, barring the Corolla. The Corolla comes with the proper boot. But the Viva as well. I mean, I'm assuming that this would be across all the derivatives.
Well, it doesn't... I mean, I suppose it doesn't really matter what the derivative is. But VW and Toyota have topped these lists for years and years. So, you know, the one that I'm surprised is not on this list is BMW. because that is one of the most searched for cars on AutoTrader.
I was just going to say that.
But then again, it's difficult to put the, maybe the 1 Series would fit, put them against these small little hatches.
But I think there's a difference between, that aspirational, let me just see, where those cars are sitting at versus what my money can actually buy me. With the modern society, and true. I think this is testament to what majority of South Africans can actually afford. It's because there's no like really really high end vehicles.
No, Fortuna. Well, the Fortuna kind of fits that description.
Look, it does. I mean, I've always been a fan of the Fortuna. I think it's a fantastic car. I just don't like the new one. You up there?
It's working.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's working. Yeah. You're alive and kicking. Did you want to say something about the Fortuna?
No, not really. Just remember also, look, the Polo Vivo sales, it is impressive, but there's also a lot of pent-up demand from the fleet market because the old one was out of circulation for a while.
Okay.
So I don't think we could really double it, but I think in real terms, they probably outperformed the normal Polo by about 30%. And I can understand why. I mean, it's a great little car. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the Fortuna is still on there
is amazing.
It's absolutely amazing because it is an expensive thing, even in its most basic versions.
Absolutely. So, anyway, well done to Toyota and obviously to VW. And then let's get into our tech segment. And it says here, batteries versus fuel cells, which will power your future? And I think the article is testament to what we've spoken about before. But, one day our grandchildren will obviously look back in horror at the pollution spewing cars that we all drove with little regard to the planet. And, I thought maybe we could just touch on the differences between, just have a look at, what are the options? We've obviously spoken about electric cars, but I think there's obviously understanding how those batteries are made up. So, a battery electric vehicle versus a hydrogen fuel celled a battery, and then obviously that's all pertaining to splitting water. And then I think there's a hydrogen internal combustion engine as well. And these are three kind of, options that manufacturers are playing with at the moment, and naturally this is what is going to power our cars in the future.
I think the lithium ion batteries for the foreseeable future are the only kind of way to go, or the way we will go, because hydrogen fuel splitting water, it's not a technology that you see in thousands of cars
absolutely.
Being sold.
Yeah.
Probably because it's expensive to do.
Yeah.
And as a result, you get absolute zero emissions, but you increase the price of the car dramatically.
Yes.
Whereas lithium ion is a technology now that most electric vehicles are using.
And obviously, and I think over time, like cell phones, and we've spoken about this, the price of batteries will naturally come down.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than likely because of consumer electronics
yes.
that lithium ion is where it is today.
Okay.
And the reason it's being used in cars is because of a consumer electronics like cell phones and other stuff. So, the technology is advanced because of the need to make this little cell phone a lot smaller.
Yeah.
So the technology kind of advances and then gets used in these cars. Whereas, try and put a hydrogen fuel cell in your phone.
Probably going to make it quite big.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the technology is just, driven from the need for other things and then gets repurposed for electric cars. Okay,
so you think that will become the main main source? Well, you never know, because
you know what, in the last 30 years, who knew where we would be today?
Yeah.
So I can't for a second say lithium ion is going to be the thing of the future, but for now it is.
Yeah.
Look, there's one other point to consider as well.
Yes.
Don't even say diesel.
In consumer electronics, no, yeah. I'm not going to go down that road right now.
A diesel power cell.
Well, you can argue with me if you want.
In consumer electronics, the charge time is not as crucial.
Correct.
I mean, you can leave your phone on a charger for an hour or two, and it'll be charged. You need to put a lot more energy into a car to get to usable range, and that's where fuel cells will actually now make up some of that difference.
Okay.
Because you put hydrogen and oxygen, basically. into this thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot quicker to refuel.
Yes.
Than an electric car would be to recharge.
Yes.
So it still uses the same electric motors and control circuitry and everything else, but the source of the electricity is different. And it's a lot quicker. So until we can sort the
cost,
the charge time, and the energy density of batteries, fuel cells, in theory, is more practical.
But is it more practical? Because in theory, yes, but it's not being used.
No, because we don't have infrastructure to refuel.
What? To put in water?
To refuel. No, look, you don't put in water. You can put in methanol or you can put in methanol and then through electrolysis and all sorts of other techniques you can generate your hydrogen. But if you have a hydrogen tank, it would theoretically end up being as quick as a petrol car, except we don't have that infrastructure yet. Same as with charging points.
But now we're building the charging point infrastructure. Yep. All over America and all over Europe, there are these superchargers everywhere.
And how long does it take to recharge a Tesla?
You can do a 30-minute quick charge with a supercharger, and you can get some decent range. So you know, at the end of the day, what we try and do as human beings and consumers is we try and fit our current lifestyle, or should I say, we try and make the product fit our current lifestyle. But all we need to do is change our behaviors
and adapt to what's
being manufactured. I mean, if you think about 10 years ago, BlackBerry, which no longer is around like these are.
Yeah.
How many times a day did you have to charge that thing?
All the time.
All the time. Okay. Yeah. And then think back before the smartphone called BlackBerry. Mm. We had the Nokia
3310.
Yeah. How often did you charge that thing?
Like once a week.
Once a week, maybe.
Depends how often you played Snake, though.
Exactly. So once a week. Then suddenly these cell phones started having to be charged every single day.
Because of color screens.
Are you complaining at the moment about charging your phone every day? No, you're not. So therefore, our behavior as human consumers have changed, in my opinion. Mm. Same with cars. You can't expect an electric car to mimic a fuel-based or an ICE car. It's just never going to happen. You know, you've got to change your behavior, change your charging patterns, change the way you actually approach using that particular thing.
Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, you know, eventually we've got to decide what kind of infrastructure is going to be rolled out. Is it going to be charging stations or these
I don't know if it's going to be anything but charging stations because they've already done it.
Yeah.
That's already there.
And it makes sense if it's working.
Yeah. I mean, are they going to take all of those supercharging stations and chuck them out the window?
Do we ever think car prices are going to come down? Are electric cars going to become cheaper for us as consumers in the distant future, 5-10 years, like cell phones have come down?
So I think the inevitability is there.
Yes.
And the reason I think that is there are 2,000 moving parts in a motor vehicle.
Yeah.
Okay. So those 2,000 parts aren't all manufactured by the brand of the car, the manufacturer of the car.
Yeah.
It's manufactured by places like Bosch and other second tier components industry.
Yeah.
All those components a lot of those components will disappear because I think there's a handful. I think there's 8 moving parts in an electric vehicle. So all of the technology becomes software.
Yeah.
And computers, which we know what these things prices do.
Yeah.
So chances are car prices will plummet as soon as demand and production capacity rises.
Absolutely. Well,
my 2 cents worth. Martin can disagree with me. I wish he would.
No, I don't think he does because he's sitting here nodding his head. But listen, we could have another whole show about this. George, Martin, Fazana, thanks very much for being in studio. To our listeners, thanks for listening. And stay safe out there. Autotrader.co.za. And have a good week, everybody. We certainly know that we're going to.
This is CliffCentral.com.